It's just about 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI. That was, of course, the Pink Panther theme, but just as obviously, not Henry Mancini at all, but Derek Sebastian and Pure Heart giving us their lilting version as we slide into another equipment-challenged edition of KUCI's Equipment-Challenged Talking Animals. I know I shouldn't say that on the air, but it's ever so frustrating, isn't it? All right. Anyway, it is Talking Animals on 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards, etc., is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I urge you to use that. I beseech you almost to use that number, if you would. We love to get calls here at Talking Animals. And don't be shy. I'm telling you. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. Also, you can instant message us via AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is, perhaps not surprisingly, Talking Animals. And other ways to be in touch include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And, of course, checking out our fab website, talkinganimals.net. Again, that is .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rousing rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website, TalkingAnimals.net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. Included at the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today our guest is Sybil Erden, director of the Oasis Sanctuary, a rescue and retirement facility for exotic and endangered birds. We'll not only find out about the Oasis Sanctuary and what exactly they do and the range of feathered friends they care for there, but such important related topics as the extended life expectancy of many birds. Some live decades longer than dogs and cats. When Sybil Erden joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. I want to remind you one more time. In fact, now is the time. I have our phone number in case you'd like to join us as we pursue the animal news here. So, it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And that's the number you can join us with your own comments and questions about animal news here. Not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss. Announcements, maybe you have an event, a fundraiser, animal-related benefit coming up, observations in the animal world, of course, any news stories you might have spotted. All of that would be most welcome. One more time, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And again, if you're someone who prefer not to call or you're just listening online and want to send a quick IM, AOL Instant Messenger, Talking Animals, and you're there. You're here. Beautiful. So, turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said all that, wait for it now. Let's talk turkey, as it were. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Here we go. Sharks, sharks, sharks. Sharks are in the news. White sharks, specifically. Aren't they? First of all, there's the great white that turned up on the Cape Cod coast. We'll read a little bit of that. Took this one from the LA Times, but it was pretty much covered everywhere. And this is Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Back and forth, back and forth. It was almost as if the great white shark was pacing, swimming the same small circle over and over. Territorial loops, said Matt Lungbert, a fisherman who has cashed in as an aquatic tour guide since the 14-foot creature showed up in a shallow water almost a week ago. The 1,700-pound female, identifiable by her gender-specific dorsal fin, swam into an estuary off Nauchon Island, about 3 miles from the Cape Cod village. Scientists believe she drifted too close to shore and became stuck in the 20-foot-deep lagoon. The area is rich in striped bass, bluefish, and other sea life to keep the shark well-fed, but marine scientists suspect she is disoriented and unable to return to the open ocean. She appears to be healthy. Soon after the shark was sighted, a state biologist used a pole to insert a device on her fin. The mechanism will provide information until April, when it will pop up and beam its location to marine scientists. Dan McKernan, and deputy director of the State Division of Marine Fisheries, said Monday that the instrument was programmed to release itself from the shark at the end of its operational existence. McKernan said it would help track the shark's travels. It goes on from there, but a more current update that I pulled off from a piece yesterday. This is from Falmouth, Massachusetts. Scientists gave a great white shark a Falmouth that breaks Saturday. Friday, researchers coaxed a 1,700-pound female to within 100 feet of an outlet to the open ocean. Jennifer Flagg of the State Executive Office of Environmental Affairs said the move put a lot of stress on the shark, so a rest was recommended. She said the crew working to move the shark was also needed a break. The 1,500-foot Okay, that's obviously not exactly adept reporting by these folks, but I think we I think we've learned earlier that it was a great deal smaller than 1,500 foot. I'm going to say 14 foot per our previous article. Anyway, first spotted on September 21st near Nashuan Island off the southwestern coast of Cape Cod. It since attracted scores of boaters hoping for a glimpse of the animal. Flagg said researchers might be back trying to prod forward the shark Sunday, meaning yesterday. So all that depends on the weather forecast, and right now, as of then, some rough seas were expected. So, more locally, especially the initial part of the story is very local, but more shark news. This is from Monterey, California. Baby great white shark caught in a fisherman's net off Huntington Beach and displayed at the Monterey Bay Aquarium has set a record Friday for a number of days spent in captivity. Aquariums have long tried to exhibit great white sharks, only to be forced to release them into the ocean when they refuse to eat. But after 17 days here, the 52-inch, 62-pound female is still gulping down salmon fillets, mackerel, and sardines, a sign that she is healthy and adapting to her new home. Less than a year old, the newcomer is swimming into the in the aquarium's million-gallon Outer Bay exhibit, getting along well with her neighbors, which include giant bluefin tuna that make her look a bit like a runt. Quote, it's a remarkable thing, said Chris Lowe, a scientist who teaches shark behavior and physiology at Cal State Long Beach's Shark Lab. It's eating an average of 2 to 4% of its body weight, and that is a really good sign that the animal is rapidly adapted to the tank and to captivity and is doing well. Goes on from there, but this too has made coverage everywhere, and I was just mentioning on the Today Show moments ago this morning. Far more locally, and sadly far less upbeat from the Daily Pilot last week. I snatched this headline: one of two puzzling bay dolphins dies. And this is from right here in the Back Bay, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area. Scientists at the Back Bay Science Center are hoping to happily end a sad event, the death of a dolphin that had made a temporary home in the bay. Two dolphins off Pearson's Port Fish Shop attracted crowds of onlookers and the interest of experts for at least 2 months. For the past 2 weeks, only one dolphin appeared in the area, and a dolphin carcass found last week appears to be the other animal. The John Scholl, environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Game. Volunteers found the dead dolphin during Coastal Cleanup Day at the Back Bay Science Center on September 18th, Scholl said. Quote, we're all sad about it, he said. Nobody wanted to see it dead. The animal appeared to have been dead at least a week, marine mammal expert Dennis Kelly said. It was far too gone to determine the gender, age, or cause of death, he said. Quote, it was an adult animal, Kelly said. There was a chance it was an older animal that died of old age. I don't think it died because it was in the bay. It goes on from there, but not coincidentally, perhaps, or maybe coincidentally. But Dennis Kelly will be our guest next week on Talking Animals, and a huge expert on marine mammals and of particular interest in dolphins. So we had him booked a month or so ago for next week, but maybe even more timely than we could have predicted. So anyway, we'll look forward to that. And you know, sad about this dolphin, although it sounds like it may or may not be the owner of those two. And in a better piece of animal-related news that actually relates to California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, last Wednesday he signed into law Senate Bill 1520, which is legislation to ban the cruel force-feeding of ducks and geese to produce pâté de foie gras, the fatty pathologically enlarged liver of force-fed ducks or geese. The passage of SB 1520 is a landmark since it marks the first time in the U.S. that a legislature has completely banned an egregious farming practice based on its cruelty. The law will take effect in, that's the only downside, 7.5 years, in 2012. It is hoped that SB 1520's passage signals a greater willingness of lawmakers to examine abusive agricultural practices and to establish some basic standards for raising animals and food production. With the signing of SB 1520 into law, California joins at least 13 countries throughout Europe that prohibit foie gras production. Additionally, the California legislation goes one step beyond other existing foie gras bans by prohibiting the sale of foie gras in the entire state. In doing so, SB 1520 does more than just affect animals within California. It affects foie gras production overall and resonates throughout the foie gras industry. Also, on Wednesday, Governor Schwarzenegger signed into law AB 1857, legislation that prohibits the decline of big cats kept in captivity. AB 1857 will discourage misguided people from seeking to keep these animals as quote-unquote pets. So, not bad, Arnold. There. That'll work. A man of many, well, if not contradictions, surprises, sometimes pleasant ones like these. Any thoughts? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. I'm going to conduct a brief experiment, if you don't mind. Okay, we may have a piece of equipment back in operation. Wouldn't that be nice? Okay, well, we'll see. Stay tuned. In all kinds of ways. Literally. Alright, it's time now for our mid or thereabouts animal news instant quiz, quick quiz. I believe you know how this works. But let me just remind you that the first person who correctly calls in with the answer, or calls in with the correct answer, as the case may be, however you want to work your syntax there, would be able to select a prize. And again, the prizes range from books and CDs from some of our previous guests to safety collars, leashes, T-shirts from various organizations, cat toys, another book we got fairly recently, Meatless Meals for Working People, this cool... CD that is a fundraising CD for PETA called Liberation, with such bands as Goldfinger, Good Charlotte, Anti-Flag, Despacitos, The Used, etc. So you could win that. Also, just to make things interesting, we're throwing into the mix. You could also, if you were to win this or later on, name that animal tune, you could have your choice of a Talking Animals T-shirt, and maybe even, if somebody has something really spectacular, a Talking Animal sweatshirt. How about that? But there's other T-shirts, too. A cool one from Paws, with a nice drawing of an elephant, since elephants don't belong in circuses, and assorted other things. So, that's what's at stake, folks. If, if you're the first one to call in correctly with the answer to this, and later, same deal, for Name That Animal Tune. All right, so here's our question. True, false... Sheep will not drink from running water. Hence, the line in Psalm 23, He leadeth me beside still waters. If you know if it's true or false, call in 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And perhaps you can select one of those fabulous prizes. Well, looks like somebody may be calling in now. Let's see. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals.
I'm going to say false.
Okay. Well, you had a 50-50 chance. Sadly, you're on the wrong side of that 50-50.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. That's it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks for playing our game, as we like to say. And
really enjoy your show.
Well, thank you very much. All right. Call back next week. All right. She's gone, I guess. All right. So, I guess probably by inference... The answer is true. Sheep will not drink from running water. All right. Maybe one more quick story, and then we want to get into the comedy corner, and then, of course, welcome our guest, Sybil Erden. So, this one seemed definitely kind of surprising and significant locally, but again, may or may not have implications well beyond that. From the LA Times, Thursday, headlines, pet lovers growling in Seal Beach. Subheadline, one of 15 homeowners groups at Leisure World is considering a ban on having animals. If adopted, the issue will probably land in court. Starts off, the notice that was posted in the Leisure World laundry room caused 75-year-old Pauline Hamrick to shudder. Her homeowners association, it appeared, was taking steps to ban pets in her Seal Beach neighborhood. Unsettling news for Hamrick, who had recently bought a Chihuahua puppy for companionship. The notice contained a draft of a policy declaring that no shareholder will be allowed to bring a pet into Mutual 12 from this day forth, and invited residents to submit comments. The fact that current pet owners will be allowed to keep them was of little comfort to Hamrick and other seniors at the retirement community. Quote, I think it's an injustice, regardless of the fact that I'd be safe with my puppy, Hamrick said. What about other people? What about people who have pets and might want to replace them someday? The pet ban is proposed only for Mutual 12, one of 15 homeowners associations in Seal Beach Leisure World. It represents 452 homes. If the proposal is adopted, it will probably end up in court, legal experts said, because a 2001 state law allows members of homeowners associations to have at least one pet. Association boards of directors have the right to make a lot of laws and regulations concerning pets, but they don't have the right to exclude them, said Yodel County Supervisor Helen Thompson, who wrote the bill when she was in the California Assembly. It seems ludicrous, given the nature of who lives in condos, many older senior citizens with health problems, with depression, and yet they're told they can't have a dog or a cat when the health benefit of having a pet with older people is well established, she said. The notice is all the more upsetting because pet ownership rules have recently been relaxed at Leisure World. And it goes on from there, but surprising? No? Yes, I think so. All right, well, that might do it for now, if we have more time. Later in the show, we'll return. There's many more new items of interest, at least I found. But, we'll just have to see how our time shapes up, the latter part of the show. But as far as the news goes, of course, if there are ever any news stories like the ones we read today or any others, really, we're wide open. Or announcements, again, of events, fundraisers, etc. that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. What else? Love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, might be redundantly, but what the hey. About the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site, talkinganimals.net. Again, that's .net. Sign up for the email list. We can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about every show we've done. We're a little behind for a different equipment snag here at KUCI. But we'll get caught up, I'm sure, at one point. Anyways, otherwise, there's some photographs and articles, both ones we've written and ones written about us. All kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Jonathan Winters with a vintage piece of comedy, improv, really, even, called A Mouse Just Caught in a Trap on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
How about doing a mouse that's just been caught in a trap?
Well, see if I've got my mouse voice with me tonight. That's a mouse, really. And I have to talk, otherwise a bit just lays there, you know?
Hey, I knew I should never have eaten that cheese. He poured some kind of diet cola on it. Oh, then there's a kitty with a big furry paw trying to get at me. Bad kitty, bad. Oh, he pulled my whiskers out. Now I won't be able to go through holes anymore. Oh, gosh. Oh, there's a little girl. Hi, little girl. Did you pick me up and make a pet out of me? She's squeezing me.
All right, that's, of course, Jonathan Winters with a piece called A Mouse Just Caught in a Trap from his album Stuff and Nonsense. Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, in fact, no doubt, are listening that very way, right now, currently, as we speak. And some of you, perhaps, arrived there through our swell website, TalkingAnimals.net. I should hope so. Anyway, before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed in Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. And while we're getting today's guest, Sybil Erden, on the phone with us, this is as good a time as any to hear an animal tune. This is music from the brand new Brian Wilson masterpiece, Smile, with a zippy little instrumental called Mrs. O'Leary's Cow. I'm Talking Animals here, KZI. Right, that was music, brand new music, by the way, from Brian Wilson with Mrs. O'Leary's Cow from Smile here on KUCI. Earlier in the show, I mentioned this week's guest is Sybil Erden, director of the Oasis Sanctuary, a rescue and retirement facility for exotic and endangered birds located in Arizona. So let's remind all of you, the phone number to join us in this conversation, it's 949-824-5824. As we welcome Sybil Erden, the Talking Animals. Sybil, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Duncan. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and thanks for joining us on Talking Animals this morning.
Thank you for having me.
There are all kinds of things that we want to learn about you and the Oasis Sanctuary, but let me Let me sort of get into that by way of asking you this. What's something that most people don't know about birds that they should?
How difficult they are to maintain.
And
birds in the wild, especially parrots, which is what we're mostly dealing with here,
okay,
are flock animals. And as such, are not used to living in the relative isolation, which is common in a household.
And what's, tell us a little bit more about that? Because, I mean, what's one of the many things I find really, you know, fascinating about birds? I mean, for example, you hear, well, on this show and elsewhere, for example, elephants, like, hey, they really shouldn't be kept isolated. They're very... you know, they have families, they shouldn't be just one in a zoo or one anywhere. But I don't know that it's as recognized so far, maybe, you know, you're obviously making inroads, that birds of the kind you're talking about are much the same. They really shouldn't be solitary. And can you kind of explain why?
Well, sure. Parrots, for example, in the wild, for most species of parrots, from the time they're born until the time they die, are never alone. They are always within earshot or eyesight of other flock members. They are prey animals as opposed to predators. So, of course, they find their security in a large flock of animals. That's how they remain safe. And these birds have been doing this successfully for 80 million years. So what happens, the only time in the wild that birds are alone is if they are sitting on eggs, in which case they are in a hormonal state, or if they're so weak and ill that they can't keep up with the flock and they know they're dying. So to take an animal that has all this hardwired survival instinct, which says that they need to be with other of their own species, and put them in isolation will make them neurotic, even if they don't know why. Now, certain types of parrots are less prone to neurotic behavior and can adjust better. But as a whole, the best we can hope for is that a bird kept in captivity bonds with you and your family as though they were your flock. But when you go to work or to school, and they're left alone, they are living under constant anxiety and stress because their hardwired survival tells them that they shouldn't be alone.
Right, and it sounds like one of the things that wiring tells them is that because they are alone, that maybe they're in great jeopardy or about to die?
Well, it definitely makes them feel as though they're in danger.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
If a hawk comes along or a lion or a tiger, whatever would be their predator in the wild, they have no one else to protect them. So
sure.
Whether they're aware of why they're anxious or not, that anxiety level is always there.
It kicks in, yeah.
And as a result, in captivity, even with domestically born birds, we see birds pulling out their feathers and screaming nonstop, and people don't understand that the reason the bird is screaming is because underneath it all, they're frightened.
And Sybil, would one solution to this be, I mean, as you're talking, I'm sort of thinking about rabbits, for example. Not too many people have elephants at their home, so this is a more of a home, sort of companion animal sort of a issue. But, you know, most people that deal with rabbits say, hey, we're not letting you take just one rabbit home. Even if you want to adopt, that's great, but you got to have two rabbits. I mean, if someone were to have two birds, would that help, or is that still not really addressing the core issue?
Well, it does help a great deal, especially with certain species like cockatoos. We tell people, for example, with cockatoos, which are extremely needy and extremely loud, if you get two cockatoos of the same sex to avoid breeding, that although it'll increase your workload a little bit, it definitely will make for a happier bird.
Mm.
The thing is that birds aren't domestic animals.
Yeah.
They are only a generation or two removed from the wild, and as such, you know, we expect our companion animals to be like puppies or kittens that are devoted to us and attached to us. And the fact is that if you have more than one bird, the most that you will be is a flock member. and, of course, a caregiver and perhaps in a parental role.
Mm-hmm.
But if what you want is a cuddle that will always love you no matter what, birds don't do that. And it is a little bit more difficult to become a flock member than to become the sole companion of this extremely needy animal. So, yes, I absolutely tell people that if they have a bird and they're having problems with the bird, the chances are a lot of those problems will be mitigated by adopting another homeless bird, for example,
mm-hmm.
bird from one of the adoption programs, and there are more and more of those cropping up every day.
Sure. All right, well, let's, having, you know, kind of eased in that way, let's look at the... Let's look at Oasis and starting with the history. I mean, something tells me you, just by the way you're responding here and just knowing what I know about you, that you and birds go way back.
Well, as a child, I grew up in New York, and I had little parakeets as pets because mm-hmm. you couldn't have cats and dogs.
Sure.
But most of my adult life, like a lot of your listeners, I'm sure, I had an invisible sign over my house that said "Sucker lives here," and every stray cat and dog in the world showed up at my door. And
mm-hmm.
if I didn't keep them, I found them a home. And at one point in my life, I decided that, gee, wouldn't it be nice to have some birds again? And it was an impulse purchase, the same as a lot of other people do. I've made all the same mistakes that everybody makes.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate enough to get a pair of birds. They were little lovebirds, tiny little birds, and I enjoyed watching them. But what ends up happening with anyone who successfully caretakes birds is everybody who doesn't want a bird gets in touch with you and
sure.
says, my aunt can't keep her budgie, my brother-in-law can't keep his conures, would you take them? And unfortunately, I didn't know how to say no.
So it sounds like with all due respect, the sucker sign went back up over your house.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so at one point in my career, I was a working artist for a long time. I had to make a decision whether to continue with my artistic endeavors and my gallery connections and so forth, and or whether I was going to give up taking in these animals. So having worked with nonprofits over the years in various levels and ways, I thought, well, you know, I can do this. I can start a small nonprofit to help these animals, and I had no idea how rapidly it would grow and how many birds there are out there that need placement. And
and when did you... Actually, let me back up for one quick, because I don't want to stray too far from Birds Oasis, but I am interested to know, what kind of artist were you, and maybe are you still, to the extent you can squeeze that in with all your duties at Oasis? What kind of art did you...
Predominantly, I was a painter.
Mm-hmm.
I was a social surrealist.
Mm.
I showed around the Western United States a great deal. And
great.
I did a lot of figurative work, a lot of work that dealt with social issues, hunger issues, very social stuff.
Wow, cool. And do you still have much time to do painting these days? Or okay, I guess that answers my question. The big chortle, I guess, would suggest no.
We have 400 birds here at the Oasis.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Even when we're fully staffed,
yeah.
Just keeping the doors open is
sure.
a full-time job.
Yeah. Well, and so when was it that you did start Oasis? Back to the tale you were telling before I interrupted with the artist question. But
that's fine. The Oasis became incorporated and became a 501c3 in 1997.
Okay.
Although I had been taking in unwanted birds since the early mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that I decided to incorporate and apply for our 501, we had over 60 birds.
Wow.
And as I just mentioned, we have somewhat over 400 birds in residence right now. What I decided to do when we first started was to make this a true sanctuary rather than an adoption program.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we work very closely with a number of adoption programs that have also sprung up since the late 90s and early 2000s to address the issue of homeless parrots. And we take in the birds that cannot be placed in other homes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an aggression problem or an elderly bird or a handicapped bird, those are the ones that we take in. The exception to that rule is if someone is going into nursing home, hospice care, or has passed away, we will take birds for whom the people have no other options. So, but even stating that, we hear about over 1,000 birds a year needing placement. And though we are the largest facility of our type in the country, we can only take in 40 or 50.
Wow. So, obviously, that begs the question, what happens to the other, 950 birds?
Well, fortunately, let me backtrack a moment.
Sure.
When we first started and we applied with the IRS for a 501 status, there was no such animal as avian welfare. There were animal sanctuaries, there were wildlife sanctuaries, there were cat and dog adoption programs. But other than a few bird clubs doing rescue and a lot of individuals around the country totally unrelated with one another doing rescue, the IRS had never heard of someone wanting to rescue quote-unquote pet birds.
Mm.
And so we kind of kicked the door open on that one. And so the year that we first started, if you went on the internet and looked up parrot rescue, three names came up, of which we were one. And the other was in Colorado and the other was in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you type that into a search engine, you literally get thousands of names. And a good number of those are 501s.
Okay.
The problem always is monetary. There isn't a whole lot of money to support the organizations, but the adoption programs have the advantage that when they put a bird up for adoption, they recoup part of the funding that they spent on medical care and housing and so forth, where a true sanctuary has nothing to sell, give away, other than maybe a T-shirt or a mug.
Yeah.
What we do is when someone calls and says, I have a lovely pet bird that needs to be rehomed for whatever reason, we refer them to what we consider to be a bona fide adoption program closer to their home. And there are a number that we work with, and there are an ever-increasing number of such organizations coming into existence. And so for a large number of their birds, there are some options. Unfortunately, a lot of people will just stick an ad in the paper and sell the bird. A lot of people will just give the bird away to someone who said, yes, I'll take it. A lot of these animals still end up in breeding programs. Unfortunately, the problem is such that we're probably looking at not just 1,000 birds a year needing placement, but potentially a minimum of 200,000 to over 1 million birds a year changing hands, not babies, but changing hands in one method or another.
And is that, Sybil, because for some of the reasons you've already mentioned, that you know, when people maybe kind of, blithely end up with a bird for whatever reason, they don't know the challenges that they face, and they just say, hey, you know what, I'm giving this bird to the first person who will take it. I mean, looks like we might have a call, Sybil. Let's would you mind taking a call and see if
I'd love to.
Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Sybil Erden. It's Talking Animals. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI with Sybil Erden. It's Talking Animals.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have the wrong number.
Okay, all right. Well, that's fun. All right. Well, you never know. But let me remind our listeners who are hopefully calling the right place that this is Talking Animals, 88.9 FM, KUCI, and Irvine. We're speaking with Sybil Erden, director of the Oasis Sanctuary Rescue and Retirement Facility for exotic and endangered birds. And we'd love to have you join the conversation, especially if you intend to, by calling us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI, or if you're more of an online type right now and you don't want to call or you prefer to just IM us, you can do so by way of AOL Instant Messenger. Screen name is Talking Animals. So, Sybil, sorry. So, I mean, if there's those kinds of numbers, I got to believe at least some of it is that people just quickly realize what they, of course, should have understood and learned beforehand, that they can't care for these birds. They don't want to, or that it's just too daunting.
Well, let me give you some statistics, and I hope I don't bore the listeners with a whole lot of numbers.
No, not at all.
If you go to HSUS or ASPCA, they've done a lot of studies on cats and dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the numbers are as follows. Cats and dogs who live an average of, let's say, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
6.5% of all the cats and dogs living in homes today, healthy animals, are going to end up in a shelter for lack of home.
Mm.
And of those animals, 60% will be put down for lack of home, for no other crime. They're not sick, they're not old, they're not feral. These are just animals that are owner turn-ins. If you extrapolate and carry those numbers over to birds, it becomes even more frightening because we're not dealing with an animal that lives 15 years.
Yeah, this is really, really crucial. I really hope you can emphasize this because, I just don't think most people, I came fairly late to the realization of just the life expectancy here. So, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
That's okay. The average life expectancy of a parrot is about 60 years.
Mm.
Now, little budgies, little parakeets, little lovebirds, people think of them as being short-lived, but their average life expectancy is 18 years, which is about the same as a cat or dog.
Mm-hmm.
You start getting into larger birds like conures, which are still small, and you're looking at 25-year life expectancy, sometimes 30.
Yeah.
You get into Amazons, which are a mid-sized bird, and certain species of Amazons have recorded life expectancies of 80 years, but some will live over 100.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You talk about cockatoos and macaws, depending on the species, you're looking at 60 to 80 years. Our oldest bird died at the age of 92, and that was documented.
Mm.
And most of the birds we have coming in, we have no idea how old they are.
Yeah.
So what you're looking at, when you take in a bird, you're looking at least 3 generations of human caregivers.
Sure.
And even if people do all their research and really, really love their animals and take the best possible care of them, I really do believe that there's a genetic component in human beings which says that our nurturing time period is probably limited to maybe 20, 25 years.
That's really interesting. Yeah, but just based on...
Based on the human
anecdotal
reading.
Yeah.
You know, you have a child, you have 3 kids, by 20
yeah.
years later, they're all out of the house,
mm-hmm.
and now you can go on and
do other
travel
things.
And kick
yeah.
back and do all these things.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people who get birds young in life and go through years and years of caregiving and do a great job, when they hit 60 years old,
mm-hmm.
65 years old, they have a bird that maybe is 30 years old and has another 50 years of life
right.
ahead of it,
yeah.
and they don't see any way out.
Yeah.
So in addition to the fact that we human beings, especially Americans, are really prone to impulse purchases of all sorts of exotic things,
sure.
whether it's a car, a boat, or an animal, we just do it if we can. So in addition to those things, there is the reality that a 20-year-old getting a bird today will have a grandchild 20 years old, and that bird still needs care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is pretty staggering when you put it in those terms. Again, if you're used to thinking like of cats or dogs or, that's really a huge, huge commitment, which, again, I just don't know that many people or enough people know going in.
Well, I just don't know if we're capable of making that sort of commitment.
Right.
I mean, most of us don't know where we're going to be in 5 or 10 years, let
sure.
alone in 60.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sybil, let me be sure to mention a few times, starting now, that you have the fabulous website. It's theoasis.org, and there's the and then a hyphen, oasis.org. And I think one of the things this is probably a good time to get into is, a bit more about the facility itself. Maybe you could tell us about that. But I also, of course, want to ask you, sort of related to the website and otherwise, like how you're supported, how you're funded with your operation there.
Well, I always like to talk about funding.
Right.
There is no government money available
yeah.
for what we do. A
yeah.
lot of people are under the misconception that 501s get government assistance. The
mm-hmm.
only assistance they give us is that your donations to us are tax exempt to you. Other than that, each and every dollar we raise comes from the public.
Mm-hmm.
We have donors that sponsor a bird. We have a sponsorship program where people would get a photograph of a bird and updated stories about the bird. And depending on the species, It can be anywhere from $5 to $60 a month to sponsor a bird. We also have memberships, and we have memberships at different levels, and the different levels will bring you a newsletter which comes out about four times a year, and it will also, depending again on the level, might provide you with a T-shirt or some other inducement.
Mm-hmm.
Our minimum membership rate is $20. Then, of course, people can always donate goods and services. We need everything.
Sure.
If people have pets, and if they have birds in particular, anything that their companion bird needs is something that our birds here need, whether it's toys or newspapers or towels or coming in to volunteer and help rake the grounds, whatever it is,
sure.
We need it.
Yeah.
But we also are a business, so that means that everything that a business needs, we need. Right now, I have the newest computer on site, and it's 6 years old.
Wow.
So when people are getting rid of old computers, we can use that. We can use envelopes and paper. You name it.
Mm-hmm.
We need it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, most of all, we need cash. With 500 animals, our overhead, our monthly overhead, is absolutely staggering.
Oh, sure.
It costs us $17,000 a month to keep our doors open to take care of these animals.
Wow. Yikes.
And so, you know, a lot of times people say, well, when I get $100 or when I get $1,000, I'll help. But the thing they don't understand is there are 5 million homes in the United States with a companion bird.
Yeah.
And if each one of those people just sent $1,
you'd be all
we'd
set.
Be sitting pretty.
Yeah. So it looks like we have another call here, and I'm going to guess this one's actually intending to call in the show. Let's try. Hi, you're on the air live on KUCI at Sybil Erden on Talking Animals.
Hi, I have a question for Sybil.
Okay, please.
Two questions, actually. Number one, I have two macaws. I have a very, very large cage, 5 feet by 7 feet by 7 feet, and I'd like to get more macaws. Both of mine are rescue situations. I'd like to get more that are rescue situations. I'd like to know what her opinion is of how many would comfortably fit in that cage.
Okay.
And then second, I kind of have a nebulous long-term plan for my macaws, depending on how stable my children's households are when I'm getting too old to care for mine, but that mine might go to Oasis. And so I'm curious about what she sees as the long-term future of Oasis.
Okay, two very good questions. Sybil, go ahead.
Well, thank you. First of all, about the caging, 7 feet by 7 feet is a good size. And we try to tell people that keep companion parrots that the larger the better. I mean, if she had a lot of land and she had the ability to build something 20 by 40 feet, we'd say that was even better. It's not so much how many animals she can keep in that environment, but who's going to get along and how much time they actually spend inside that environment. If she has another play area and those birds are being kept in there basically when she's not home or when they're sleeping, that might be able to house four or five birds comfortably. But if there are only, if that is where they live all the time, I would say certainly no more than two more. And they would have to be introduced very carefully because the two birds that are in there, that is their environment. So the two that are in there may have to be removed into another environment for a week or two before being introduced to these other birds. And if I might recommend, there are some very, very good adoption programs in Southern California, where your listeners are.
I'm in Montana.
Oh, you're in Montana. My goodness.
We love the Internet. We love people who listen online, don't we? Yeah.
Oh, that's fabulous. I'll tell you what. If you would be kind enough to look up my website and go to Bird Related, there are two email addresses that you can click on.
All right.
Bird Related will get you to me, and I will do a little research and find out the closest people to you. I don't know if there are very many in Montana.
Okay.
But I would certainly be more than happy to help you find a couple of more macaws that would need care. Now, going to estate planning. Estate planning is something that is crucial when dealing not only with long-lived parrots, but even with your cats and dogs. I mean, we could slip in the bathtub today and be gone, and what happens to our animals? And currently, the law states that all of our animals, no matter how intelligent and beloved, are no different than a chair in the eyes of the law, which means that they're property and can be disposed of as your executor or family see fit. And while most people who are fortunate enough to have animal-loving children expect the kids to take the animals, that isn't always the case. And there definitely should be backup plans put into effect. On our website, under the articles section, there are two articles on estate planning. One of them is a very, very brief introduction, which I wrote, and the other one is a very in-depth article written by an estate planning attorney who specializes in setting up estates for companion animals. And so I would encourage all the listeners to look at those articles and do their research, and even if you have friends and family who think they're going to take your animals, remember that your friends are aging as rapidly or slowly as you are, and that things may change in your children's lives where they may not be able to take care of the animals 20 years from now. So that being stated, we believe that with the support of the public, the Oasis has the ability to continue taking in animals for literally generations. Part of the reason we have such high overhead right now is that we purchased a 72-acre parcel in southeastern Arizona, and we are slowly but surely developing it. And although we have 400 animals and 7 staff members currently, there is enough room to expand. Hello?
Hello.
Okay. As we build large aviaries, we will ultimately literally be able to caregive thousands of birds over the next 50 or 100 years.
Mm. That's amazing. That's so great, Sybil. And sadly, we're at the end of our time here, but those were great answers, and I appreciate the caller calling in with those questions. And just a couple of quick things along those lines. Again, the website is theoasis.org. And, yeah, you hit on a couple things I really wanted to emphasize, especially about the website, that there's great, great articles. I mean, your series about our birds' pets. I mean, I learned so much. It was just fascinating. And I love the bird-related inquiry email where you can just, I guess, send in an email, and apparently you'll respond. So, Sybil, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck. And again, we want to thank Sybil Erden from the Oasis Sanctuary. One more time, it's www.the-oasis.org. And you're doing great, great work, and we really appreciate it, Sybil.
Thank you, Duncan, for having me on.
Absolutely. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, we want to thank again Sybil Erden from the Oasis Sanctuary. And really, I wish we'd had more time, but we covered some good ground, and I just urge you to check out the website for more. Again, the-oasis.org. It's Name That Animal Tune. You know the deal. It's an animal-related tune. If you can recognize it, call in 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. The first one that guesses correctly will get one of those prizes we described earlier. All right, it's Name That Animal Tune on KUCI. This amuses me in some way. I don't know. But can you name that animal pin? That's the key thing.
Are you there, Duncan?
Yeah. Hi, you're on live on KUCI.
That's Cat Scratch Fever.
Yes, it is. All right, we're running desperately behind, so please email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'll figure out which prize you'd like and how we can get that to you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for playing. Congratulations. All right, we are at the end and almost past the end of Talking Animals here on KUCI. I want to thank, again, Sybil Erden from the Oasis Sanctuary. One more time, the website is the Oasis, the-oasis.org. I want to thank you all for listening and for our phone calls. Next Monday, our guest will be Dennis Kelly, who I alluded to earlier, is a longtime professor at Orange Coast College, but a major marine mammal expert, and specifically has an interest and specialty in dolphins. So that'll be next Monday, October 11th. Hope you'll join us for that. We're going to have to skip over all our usual chatter, other than to say please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great blues show here on KUCI. This has been Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI. And I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to others. And as always, we're going to close things out with an animal song. We chose this one as a nod to Sybil Erden and the Oasis Sanctuary. This is the Eels with I Like Birds on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds. I don't care for walking downtown, crazy auto car gonna mow me down. Look at all the people like cows in a herd. Well, I like birds. If you're small and on the search, I've got a feel for you to perch on. Birds.